Hello and welcome to the Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending June the 6th, 2025. If you have any problems with the recording, or if you know of someone else with sight impairment who might like to receive our free recordings, please call Liz LeGrice, whose number is on the label attached to the memory stick. Your readers today are Polly Cook.
Hello.
Ben Lachlan.
Hello.
And Polly and Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines this week are fears for new town plan in countryside, hospital to share in £21 million funding, and tally-ho reopens. So, may we have the first headline, please, Polly.
And this is entitled, Fears for New Town Plan in Countryside. A new report spotlighting Mitchell Dever Station as a site for 10,000 new town has been criticised as flawed by campaigners. The report by WPI Strategy identifies the area as one of 12 nationwide that have been highest potential for trailblazer development. A government new towns task force is considering the locations. Mitchell Dever Station has been proposed since the late 1980s, but the new report has been slammed. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, said, "It's seriously flawed." Sites with potential were identified using an index based on five key measurable indicators: housing supply gap, land availability, proximity to economic hubs, housing affordability, and development viability. Public polling was also used to identify where acceptability for new development would be highest. The other 11 sites are Milton Keynes, Leeds, South Gloucestershire, Central Bedfordshire, Wiltshire, Huntingdonshire, West Northamptonshire, Mid Devon, South Cambridgeshire, East Hertfordshire and Northumberland. Each site would cost up to £4 billion. Tessa Robertson, chair of the Dever Society, said, "Our view of this report is that it is deeply flawed. The report looks at the suitability of local authorities to have a large new town within their district, rather than looking at particular sites, and we are astonished that Winchester District has been included in the list of preferred areas. The report assesses local authority suitability for new towns, using criteria such as public acceptability for new towns, and Winchester does not support large new towns in the countryside, and whether the authority has achieved its government housing targets. Winchester has consistently exceeded them. It is even more extraordinary that the report specifically mentions Mitchell Dever New Town just because it is located within Winchester District, and with no assessment of the suitability of the site itself. This report does not contribute in any useful way to the debate about the location of the government's 12 proposed new towns." Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "It's an odd, very theoretical and seriously flawed piece of work. The WPI strategy analysis is based on assessing full districts rather than particular areas within those districts for development. It then weighs up the Winchester district because of its green fields, housing costs, railway connections, and having motorways like the M3 and the M27 within its boundaries, and goes on to decide that Mitchell Dever Station would be an obvious location based on almost no analysis at all. All the previous assessments of traffic and the impact of building on remote green fields in the Dever Valley are ignored. Even though it gives the district points for being near to Portsmouth and Southampton, it ignores the fact that Mitchell Dever Station isn't. Unfortunately, gazing at spreadsheets doesn't always have much to do with reality, and that's certainly the case here. A report in the Financial Times said the 12 proposed locations would cost up to £48 billion. The new towns task force is expected to come up with locations this year. The developer, the O'Flynn Group, submitted plans for 20,000 homes at Mitchell Dever Station to the task force in February.
Thank you, Polly. Next, please, Ben.
This article is titled, Hospital to Share in £21 million funding. Over £21 million has been secured for Hampshire's hospitals so they can complete essential maintenance fixes. The government has unveiled a significant funding boost of over £212 million for the South East region, which will benefit patients in Hampshire by addressing crucial repairs to ageing hospitals. The funding provided aims to deliver vital maintenance in dire state hospitals to help prevent cancelled appointments and operations and reform them. It will enable people to benefit from improved services and facilities throughout the health system in Hampshire, including the Isle of Wight and the two unitary authorities of Southampton and Portsmouth. Six hospitals and one ambulance station will receive £21.25 million. This includes the Gosport War Memorial Hospital, which is set to receive £6.401 million to improve its electrical systems and undertake fire safety works. Southampton General Hospital and Princess Anne Hospital will receive £7.305 million to improve their electrical and ventilation systems and conduct external building fabric works. St Mary's Hospital, located on the Isle of Wight, will receive £1.133 million to enhance its energy, heating and water systems, as well as to improve the internal building structure and fixtures. Additionally, fire safety measures will be implemented and lifts will be upgraded and replaced. According to the government, addressing the backlog of maintenance at NHS hospitals will help prevent cancellations, as services were disrupted over 4,000 times across England in 2023-24 due to issues with poor quality buildings. Here is the list of seven NHS buildings that will receive funding for vital improvements. Gosport War Memorial Hospital, £6.401 million. Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, Royal Hampshire County Hospital, £1.63 million. Isle of Wight NHS Trust St Mary's Hospital, £1.1133 million. Portsmouth Hospitals University NHS Trust, Health Records Library, Totten Renal Services, St Mary's Community Hospital, and Queen Alexandra Hospital, £220,000 of improvements to water systems and communication systems. Fire safety works, lift upgrades or replacements, Solent NHS Trust, Western Community Hospital, £3.873 million to fire safety works. South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust and High Wycombe Ambulance Station, and all the resource centres within it, £690,000. And then Southampton General Hospital and Princess Anne Hospital, £7.305 million.
Thank you. And Jane, please.
And the tally-ho reopens. Punters raise a glass to refurb. After months of renovations, a Hampshire country pub has reopened its doors to the public. The tally-ho is finally welcoming back punters in Broughton after 3.5 years it closed in 2021. Dozens of volunteers have worked for months to refurbish the pub, with the first drinks served to returning and new regulars on Saturday, May the 31st. The pub was opened following a pair of short speeches from members of the management team. Jane Tabor, part of the management team, said, "It is amazing that we achieved this in 5 months. It's all down to the shareholders, volunteers and everyone who got involved. We hope to have visitors from all over. It's lovely." The first people to be served at the newly opened pub were Dave and Jan Greep. Dave, who was a regular before the pub shut, said, "I just feel it's somewhere where you can come and spend some money and see your friends and the community. Most places are expensive, so I hope this is an affordable place where people can come and meet." Jeff Glibbery, who has become a shareholder in the pub, said, "It's wonderful to have it open. It was a very good pub. Every single member of my family has walked across that threshold. This was the heart of the village. I'm over the moon that it's open. It is lovely. It's wonderful to be back here. Some more of my family are coming along later, so it will be a big deal." Brian Keane was one of the volunteers who helped to refurbish the pub. He said, "It's fabulous to have it open. It's a good accomplishment for the village. A lot of people have come through to make it happen, and a lot of people have donated things like the back door." Kirsty Gallagher is working as the pub manager. She said, "I've lived my life in Broughton all my life. I am just thrilled that the Tally-ho has reopened, and it's so nice to be chosen as the manager. It has been a lot of work and people building up, but it is fantastic to be open after so many months of refurbishment. It's just amazing. I had two of my boys' christening parties here, so it's nice to be back and working behind the bar. Mary Ridley was similarly impressed with the pub's refurbishment. She said, "Well, I hope that this will work out for the committee who have worked so hard to organise it. This is a very good refresh of the inside. They even found a fireplace that we did not know existed. They found all sorts of things, and they've also redone the garden. It's not often that I feel hopeful for people trying new things, but I'm quite happy. It's a lovely day to be here with alcohol in one's hand." And sure enough, there is a lovely photo of Mary Ridley with a glass of white wine in her hand, holding it up to toast. And a couple of other photos, one of people behind the bar choosing their menu, and some out in the refurbished garden, which has picnic tables with umbrellas over, and is a good size and clearly very welcome.
So that concludes the week's headlines, and now we'll progress through the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum first person editorial comment. Following that, we'll continue with items of general news. So here are the death notices. Baker, Christopher William Baker, died peacefully on the 18th of May 2025. Corns, John Addis Corns, on 25th of May, 25. Eleanor John, MBE, passed peacefully at home on the 17th of May, 2025. Bright, Roy Bright, on 2025. And Ian Byron Jerram, passed away in Queen Alexandra Hospital on the 10th of May. And Whale, Pearl Patricia Jean Whale, sadly on the 28th of May, 25. And Christopher Malcolm Jones, peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 26th of May. Stephen Muschin on the 11th of May. Howard Alexander Pierce on the 3rd of May, 2025. Dr. Richard John Summerfield on the 26th of May, 2025. Lucy Parrott on the 22nd of May, 2025. Kent, Joyce Kent, née Dole, on the 20th of May, aged 78 years. And Keith Lawrence Webb in Winchester Hospice on the 28th of May. And that concludes the death notices. Can we have the Christian comment, please, Polly?
The Christian is from Moira Redmond, entitled How Pentecost Satisfies a Thirst. This coming Sunday is the Feast of Pentecost, a huge day in the Christian Church, but probably the one that means least to those who are not churchgoers. It marks the creation of our church, its birthday, as it might be, 2,000 years ago. Our Lord Jesus Christ had come to earth as a man. He had been crucified and then rose from the dead. He appeared to many of his disciples on several occasions, and then he went back to heaven. The Feast of the Ascension marks that. Then followed a quiet time, a hiatus. His followers did not know what was going to happen next. They had refound their Saviour and then lost him again. They were frightened, understandably, and they hid together in an upper room in Jerusalem. Jesus' mother, Mary, was with them. When the day of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Suddenly, a sound like the blowing of a violent wind came from heaven and filled the whole house where they were sitting. They saw what seemed to be tongues of fire that separated and came to rest on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit enabled them. That's Acts 2. So they went out to the people outside, where God-fearing Jews from every nation were present in the city, and started preaching and converting. Can you imagine what it must have been like to go from such deep fear and uncertainty, full of worries and questions, to sudden faith and confidence? They stepped out of a dark, secluded room into sunshine and light and joy. Pentecost is always the feast of the Holy Spirit, the mysterious third part of the Trinity, with God the Father and God the Son. It's not a concept that's easy to explain, even if you think you understand it, but it is possible to take it on trust. You don't need to be able to explain it. Once you start looking for it, you'll find you know what it is. Church people often use a metaphor of water for the gifts of the Holy Spirit. We can be dry and sad and thirsty, and then the Holy Spirit fills us to overflowing, and we become different people. All those gifts, the water, will come to us again and again if we ask for them. It is overflowing and never-ending, like God's forgiveness and love. There is this ancient prayer: Come, Holy Spirit, fill the hearts of your faithful and kindle in them the fire of your love. Send forth your Spirit, and they shall be created, and you shall renew the face of the earth. The cardinal selecting the new pope at the conclave used it as a prayer for wisdom and the right choice. Pentecost Sunday is the 50th and final day of the Easter season. We go through this every year. It is cathartic, deeply spiritual, and leaves us with recharged batteries and full of hope and energy for the future. It might sound strange to you, but think of us like the disciples, stepping out into the sunshine and light and joy.
Thank you, Polly. And there are 8 letters to the editor this week, starting with one read by Ben.
This letter is titled, Forward Thinking Needed in the City. I wonder if you would agree, the world is changing, but also where we live, especially here in the city of Winchester. What can't happen is that you start to fill it with accommodation of flats. What you could do is have smaller retail units with accommodation above the premises. I'm not just talking about your usual sweet shop or craft shop. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be something that families, young people are interested in. Art never fades. It can be neglected and the premises can be outpriced. You cannot expect people to put all their efforts into whatever it is commercially they want to do when the rent is too high. What do you do when you don't want a dead city after 6 o'clock? You put in family and entertainment. You want an area where the whole families can go to. And there are different games, i.e. snooker, bowls, and any activities that families can enjoy, especially in the winter. You need another area for showing local artistic work, a gallery. Yes, of course, you'll need your restaurants, your cafes, your pop-up shops. That's what brings the areas alive. If you do not go forward into the new world that is coming, that area that you're contemplating will die after 6 o'clock. There is so much that you could do. You've got the river, and yes, it would need imagination. Young people would probably enjoy an area that they could perform. Your buskers, they're so important as long as they are worthy. What I'm talking about is life, keeping things with people in it. If you put people in their premises, that part never dies because there are people. You want a play area. I know you'll say, well, they've already got that, so what? Another little area with crazy golf or chess, giant games. Yes, a nightclub. What's wrong with a nightclub managed properly, responsibly? And what about a cinema? There's so much more. I'm very aware that the future has got to be thought of. What is now won't be in 10 years. There is much, much more forward thinking needed to be done. And that letter was from Eileen Berry in Prizedean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Jane.
And Ed Slattery writes, Stop Park Run Parking Scam. It is time to stop the Winchester Park Run Parking Scam at River Park. Parking is free for the first hour from 9 a.m. on Saturday, but only if you have obtained and displayed a ticket from the machine. The information about the required ticket is displayed on the signage well above head height and in small lettering. Most residents know about this old rule, but visiting park runners do not. The enforcement team will tell you that they come on Saturday morning before 10 to catch overnight parkers. So, do they come at 8 a.m. when the car park is empty apart from overnighters? No. Do they come after 10 a.m. when some paid parking could have been used by morning parkers? No. They show up every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. when the run is ongoing, specifically to catch unwary visitors and send them home with a fine instead of a coffee and cake they were looking forward to. This scam is costing Winchester its goodwill and custom from tourists and must be stopped now. Our legal system works on the innocent until proven guilty. The enforcement team should never issue a penalty before 10 a.m. unless they can prove that the vehicle was parked overnight and the time used on Friday. The fines are also legally unfair, as the information above the rules is effectively hidden on the signs. The team should be prevented from issuing further tickets before 10 a.m. and all fines already issued to park runners should be refunded. Anyone issued a fine should contest it. Let's make Winchester a welcoming place for our visitors. And that's from Ed Slattery, Forest Road, Chandler's Ford.
And this is from Jackie White, entitled Celebrating Volunteers. As we mark Volunteers Week, June the 2nd to June the 8th, I wanted to take this opportunity to celebrate the outstanding volunteers who contribute towards the work of RNID, the national charity supporting 18 million people in the UK who are deaf, have hearing loss, or tinnitus. Every day, through our community activities across the UK, around 300 incredible RNID volunteers take part in a diverse range of activities. Whether it's offering hearing aid maintenance and advice on hearing loss and tinnitus at RNID near you drop-in sessions, or acting as ambassadors by giving talks to local groups and organisations, raising awareness of our work. These activities simply wouldn't be possible without the dedication of volunteers who generously give their time to support others. Over the past year alone, RNID volunteers gave more than 16,000 hours of their time, helping us reach over 47,000 people across the UK. It's a remarkable achievement. That's why this Volunteers Week is the perfect opportunity to recognise everything our volunteers do and say a huge thank you. Your time, passion and dedication mean the world to us and make a real difference to people who are deaf, have hearing loss or tinnitus. And that was from Jackie White, the Director of Community Services at RNID.
This letter is titled Not Impressed. Apparently Mr. Brooking is impressed with the performance of Sir Keir Starmer to date. I doubt very much whether many farmers or fishermen would agree. And that was from Mike Sherwood in Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And David Willits writes, VE Day celebrations disappointment. As a very little boy living in the area of Hyde in Winchester for VE Day in 1945, I do remember the celebrations and tea in the parish church hall, although perhaps not understanding the depths of its meaning. Although living in Bournemouth in 1995, I travelled to Winchester for the VE Day 50 celebrations, both at the Broadway and Hyde Church Hall, and have many photographs I took on that day. This year, I stayed over in Winchester for 2 days to cover VE Day 80 on May the 8th. I walked extensively throughout the city area with my memories of 80 years ago. I have to say that I was very disappointed in how little the city did to celebrate compared with 1995. The Mayor of Winchester held a special afternoon tea, there was a special talk in St Lawrence's Church, a special service in the Cathedral, and that was it. Does this mean that 20 years on, in 2045, the centenary of that terrible war, the worst in UK history, would be thought of much the same as we think of the Napoleonic Wars today? Or perhaps I'm just getting old. And that was from David Willits, Durley Chine Road, Bournemouth, and there is a photograph of him standing in a doorway of a house in Winchester holding up a photo of the 50th anniversary that he came here to celebrate.
And this is from Rupert Pitt, entitled Huge Increase in Population. The BBC Today programme on the 29th of May states the first reservoir since 1995, that's 30 years ago, is to be built. And since 1995, Britain's population has increased by 9 million. You can listen to the Today programme 3.4 minutes in, available on BBC Sounds. Thus, Britain's population has gone from 1995, 58 million, to 2025, 67 million, an increase of 9 million. This averages 216,666,000 a year for 30 years. Migration Watch, established in 2001, estimates that three quarters of the growth in the population has come from immigrants and their descendants born here. Thus, of the 9 million increase in Britain's population, 6.5 million are immigrants, their families and descendants. This increase has been allowed by Labour from 1997 to 2010 and the Conservatives from 2010 to 2024, who in four general elections promised to reduce and control immigration. In the period June 2023 to June 2024, net immigration was 901,000. From June 2022 to June 2024, Britain's population grew by 1,645,000. Thus, over 14 years, from 2010 to 2024, the Conservatives broke all their manifesto promises. The expression was, "My heart is with Labour, but my money is with the Conservatives," meaning that Labour may spend more on education than the NHS, but the Conservatives are practical and competent. This has proved to be wholly untrue after their record. "I am not against immigration. Skilled immigration has greatly benefited Britain. In 1984, I had a life-saving stomach operation at Princess Alexandra Hospital in Portsmouth, undertaken by an immigrant doctor. In 1986, my father had a life-saving operation at RHCH done by an immigrant doctor. I spent four nights at Southampton General Hospital in 2016, and a third of the staff were immigrant doctors and nurses." Such a huge increase in population, 1,645,000 alone, between June 2022 and June 2024, must place great pressure on housing, causing rents to rise, education and schools, and the NHS. Do not vote Labour or Conservative. They have betrayed Britain. Read the manifestos of the Liberal Democrats, Reform and the Green Party, and vote for one of them. And that was from Rupert Pitt of St Cross Road, Winchester.
Okay.
This letter is titled Water, Water. "I think many members of the public will agree with me. Firstly, where do stadiums get their water from? Seeing as they drench the pitches now and again, several years ago it was stated that no person, business or company is allowed to draw water from streams, rivers or the water table. They need permission from an authority. Furthermore, the water companies should be banned from claiming arable land for reservoirs, which turn out to be white elephants. They are ignoring the forecasts from many years ago that stated that by the year 2050, southern England will become a desert. That looks like it will be sooner, as the weather forecasts in the future even less rain than we get now. The government and Ofwat should order the water companies to observe their position of supplying us with water to our needs, requirements, as to not restrict our usage, including hose pipe dams. We depend on water, as do the farmers, to supply homegrown produce. Otherwise, the homegrown produce will be well and truly so expensive it could cost the earth, and many people will succumb to a lack of food. They should invest in destination plants to ensure our requirements are met. It would also be great if some of our taxes were put towards half the costs to keep the increased bills that would be introduced." And that letter was sent in by G.N. Barrett and Nicholson Place, Aylesford.
And here we have Kimberly Barber writing, "On my phone, 4+ hours a day. Bing, bleep, buzz. There's always seems to be some alert or some noise trying to attract my attention away from what I'm doing and draw it to my phone. No matter where I am, at my desk, at home in bed, or even in the bathroom, there's no escaping it. Sometimes I feel like my phone is glued to my hand. I attended a business networking event last month that involved a panel discussion on mental health in the workplace. One of the guest speakers was talking about ways to bring down our stress levels and mentioned not spending so much time on our phones, amongst other things. He said that we needed to be honest with ourselves about how much time we spent on our devices. He even joked that one day there would be meetings in church halls with people sitting in circles talking about their phone usage akin to an AA or an NA meeting. "Hello, I'm Matt and I spend 6 hours per day on my phone," he told the crowd. I wasn't sure if he was joking or being serious. I mean, 6 hours? That sounds like a lot, I thought. I probably sleep for 6 hours some nights. Surely he couldn't be spending that much time per day on his phone. I tried to brush the thought aside, and then I read another article about a campaign to make our children's childhood smart home free. This included some alarming facts about how much time is spent on phones and how that is negatively affecting young people's mental health. Then, wherever I went, there were people glued to their devices, people on the bus glued to their screens, people waiting for the bus looking at their phones, people walking down the street looking down, staff in every shop either looking at devices or hiding them when someone walks in, cafe workers leaning on tills, ignoring dirty tables to scroll. I saw footage of someone crossing the road, oblivious, phone in hand, and nearly getting run down. I went to Paulton's Park, and there was a man on a roller coaster on his phone. I went to a spa, and guess what? Everyone was on their phones, relaxing in their robes, even someone in the hot tub. I decided to look at my own usage, and with iPhones, there is a way in your settings to see how much time you spent on your device and what you've been doing. It's in settings under screen time. I was horrified to see that some days I spent more than 4 hours on my phone. Some days I had received nearly 400 notifications from apps. Some days I had picked up my device more than 100 times. Mind-blowing numbers. Most of the time I was on either social media, Facebook and TikTok being the biggest culprits, or on email. Other times I was on Chrome looking at things, reading stories, answering my own questions, and other times I was on Spotify listening to music or using Google Maps to find my way to places. I decided to impose strict limits on my social media times, restricting them to 30 minutes per day. And I also decided to delete email apps from my phone. I also put strict time limits on so that no app could ping after 9 p.m. or before 6 a.m. I thought that would be enough to improve my mental health. However, what happened was that I was a mess. I did not know what I was doing, where I was meant to be, or what I had agreed to. Sorry to those of you whom I missed when I was supposed to be stationed as a marshal along the walk the Watergrass Way on Sunday. It's been really difficult to stick to the limits, and I feel myself like an addict saying to the device, just one more hit, as I press the ignore limit button. In order to look something up after 9 p.m. or scroll through social media one last time before bed. I have reinstalled email onto my phone, as that was probably a step too far, maybe too soon. Perhaps I need to work gradually on this addiction. Is there a methadone alternative for a smartphone? If I feel like this at the age of 42, heaven only knows what I should have been like at the age of 16. I mean, it was bad enough when at the age of 19, one of my bills for my contract mobile phone came in at £120 due to the number of text messages I had been sending. Remember when they were 12p each? So, the point is, maybe Matthew Holman from Simpler Health was right when he said that we need to start being honest about our smartphone usage. It's the only way we can start to address it. We can't do much about the wider world, but we can start with ourselves. So, go on to your settings and take a peep at your phone usage if you're brave enough, the statistics might just shock you.
And this letter is from Liz West, entitled Quit Vaping. Vapers in Hampshire are urged to self-refer to a free quit service after the ban on single-use vapes comes into force. The estimated 47,000 adults in Hampshire who could be using disposable vapes are being urged to consider self-referring to a free quit vaping service being offered by Smoke Free Hampshire after the government's ban on disposable vapes came into force on Sunday. According to a study from ASH, the Action on Smoking and Health, last year about 11% of adults in Great Britain were using vapes, the highest rate ever recorded, with approximately 5.6 million adults vaping. That's approximately 30% of whom were primarily using disposable vapes. In 2023, approximately 69% of young people aged 11 to 17 in Great Britain who vaped were using disposable vapes, a significant increase from 7.7% in 2021. Overall, vaping among 11 to 17-year-olds in the UK doubled from 3.3% in 2021 to 7.6% in 2023. Whether it's smoking or vaping, taking the first step towards quitting is easier with the right support system. Smoke Free Hampshire offers a comprehensive toolkit of nicotine replacement products, powerful advice, tips, and flexible in-person or phone support from expert mentors for people of all ages. It's been proven that you are three times more likely to quit with support, and thanks to funding from Hampshire County Council, it's free. You can self-refer now by texting QUIT to 80011. The government's ban on the sale of disposable vapes came into effect on Sunday, June the 1st, after which it will be illegal for businesses to sell, supply, or even possess single-use vapes. The ban extends to all retailers, both physical and online, and includes healthcare and stop smoking services. According to the government, the aim of the ban is to reduce environmental waste, protect young people from vaping, and support overall public health. And there is a correlation between the single-use vape ban and the tobacco and vapes bill that's currently going through Parliament, which the government hopes will create the first smoke-free generation. In addition to proposing powers to extend the indoor smoking ban to specific outdoor spaces, most public places and workplaces are expected to become vape-free as well as smoke-free. A significant proportion of the population that are using single-use vapes are teens and young people. Of course, as a service provider, we strongly support initiatives that will help protect the health of young people, in addition to the environmental benefits that will be gained from the ban. However, we also recognise that for some adults that have been dependent on tobacco, vaping has been helping them to reduce their dependency on tobacco. But if you've been successful in that, then it may be time to start thinking about quitting vaping too. This may sound daunting for some, but if you've managed to quit cigarettes, with our help and support, we can help you quit vaping as well. To self-refer, text QUIT to 80011 or visit smokefreehampshire.co.uk. And that was from Liz West, the Head of Services at Smoke Free Hampshire.
Boys. And at the top there's a photo, eight photos of boy, Bedford boys from the town in Virginia who fought on D-Day. The Southwick Revival will honour the Bedford boys killed in the Normandy landings. Relatives of the Bedford boys from Bedford, Virginia, in America, will visit Southwick on Sunday, June the 8th to remember the young men. They were part of the first wave of Allied forces landing on Omaha Beach in June 1944 and came under heavy machine gun fire and shelling. 19 men from Bedford lost their lives in just 15 minutes as the ramps went down and the men leapt onto the beach, meaning the town suffered the highest loss per capita itself on D-Day. The soldiers were members of the Virginia National Guard, 29th Infantry Division, Company A, 1st Battalion, 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Infantry Division. Visitors to the Southwick Revival will hear from the nephews and niece of some of the Bedford boys in the Revival's event marquee from 1 p.m. The guests will recall memories of their brave uncles. The story of the Bedford boys has since become internationally recognised, inspiring books, a film and a sculpture alongside the US National D-Day Memorial, which was unveiled in Bedford County in 2001 by President George W. Bush. The memorial, known as the Overlord Arch, honours the country's tragic loss of a generation of men. And the second part of Belgarum is a weekend of classic nostalgia. A railway line will be transformed into a world of classic nostalgia this summer. The Watercress Line will host its Retro Wheels and Rails event on Saturday, June the 14th and Sunday, June the 15th. This weekend will celebrate all things retro, spanning the 1940s through to the 1970s, with each heritage station along the line transporting visitors to a different decade. Visitors will be able to enjoy live music, vintage cars, and even try out 1970s entertainment on period games consoles. Find out more and book on the Watercress Line website. And this we get that this is accompanied by a photograph of a line of very old cars, beautiful blue, silver, green, and by the looks of it on the front, they are most of them are Austins.
And here's Ben with the editorial comment.
Welcome, pub news in one Hampshire village. Last year, the Chronicle reported on the 10th anniversary of Mandy and Peter Boxall at the thriving Fox Inn in Bramdean near Orrishead. Today, we report on the recent reopening of a pub in Browton near Stockbridge after a closure lasting more than 3 years. Normally, when Hampshire country pubs close, they usually stay closed. Property prices are so high that in many instances, the building is worth more to sell as a home than to continue operating as a business. The rise in the cost of living, smoking and drink driving laws have also hit the trade over the years too. So we wholeheartedly welcome the news that the Tally Ho has reopened after the public rallied round to invest in the business. Its first day of trading was Saturday and the owners must have been pleased with the responses from the villagers and people from afield. The statistics of the pub closures always mentions when doors close, but do not take into account when they rise again to act as focal points for their community. Browton is a highly unusual case as it is in a relatively small village with not one but two pubs. The other one is the Greyhound, and they are literally a stone's throw apart. Pubs have had to evolve, and the days when a grumpy landlord could offer three types of beer and three flavours of crisps are long gone. With the right people in charge, they can be made a success. Pubs are embedded in our culture, and long may that continue.
And now we continue with items of general news, beginning with one from Polly.
And this is entitled Theatre to Stage Original Sherlock Holmes Tale. A theatre company will bring a fresh and original Sherlock Holmes adventure to the stage. Blue Apple Theatre, which has learning disabled performers, will perform Sherlock Holmes and the Thief of Antiquity at the Theatre Royal in Winchester on Wednesday, June the 11th and Thursday, June the 12th. The play is about the detective and Dr. Watson as they face Moriarty, who has plunged London into chaos. The duo must solve a series of riddles given to them by a Greek chorus, eight masked messengers inspired by ancient theatre, before Moriarty can unleash his most audacious plot yet. As part of the show, audiences will be invited to join in and help Holmes and Watson unravel the clues before disaster strikes. Blue Apple Theatre's artistic director, Richard Conlon, who worked with the cast to devise the show from scratch, said, "If this show has a point to make, it is about creating a world where differing ways of thinking are valued and cherished. It was certainly a very far-off dream in 1895 when our story is set." The company began developing the play in September 2024, with the creative process documented by University of Winchester film production students Erin Mitchell, Luke Church and David Box as part of their Telling Real Stories module.
This article is titled Having a Ball at Sellout Do. Hundreds of people gathered at Winchester Cathedral to celebrate Jane Austen's life with an event that she would have been familiar with, a Regency Ball. The ball took place within the cathedral on Saturday, May 31st, with scores of people dressing up in era-appropriate clothing to dance the night away. Some of the attendees travelled from far afield to attend the event, which was sold out. Jeff and Jenny Hogan travelled from Oxford to attend the evening. Jeff said, "We are looking forward to it. It is nice to get dressed up just once in a while. There is an active Jane Austen group in Oxford. I think people come to see these things for all different reasons. Some people are big fans of her work and others like the dancing." Also attending were Richard Easton and his wife Betsy Wu. Richard said, "We are both aware of Jane Austen's life and her death and the fact that she is buried here. Betsy is a very exceptional dancer and I am just lucky to be here. Edward and Jacqueline Hill were looking forward to a fun night. Edward said, "We only bought the tickets today, so we are very lucky to be here. It is going to be great. It's a great part of the commemorations. Hopefully it will bring people out in their period clothes." Friends Sally Graham and Victoria Ware attended the event together. Victoria said, I'm a bit of a Jane Austen fan, so it will go afar. This is the third Jane Austen thing we're doing this year. We are trying to do as much Austen stuff as possible this year. We have also wanted to do some dancing, so it will be fun." Sisters Catherine Pierce and Rowena Slate also attended together. Catherine said, "I'm a big Austen fan, but we both do the Jane Austen Festival every year in Bath. We make our own costumes and go to the balls. It's a thing people do. I'm sure we will know most of the people here tonight." Winchester resident Rafael Lopez was attending with his friend Patricia Morales, who had travelled from Kent to attend the event. Rafael said, "I live here, and I heard about the evening, so I called the cathedral, and they said that they were out of tickets, but we managed to get some because we were on the wait list." Patricia added, "We're both from Mexico, so you can say that Jane Austen has Mexican fans."
And here we have Shaken Up, Stirred and Raising Spirits. Winchester Cocktail Week is returning for its sixth round this June. It is Hampshire's biggest festival of spirits and mixed drinks, with a whole week of discounts and offers at some of Winchester's top venues. Between June the 2nd and June the 8th, the event will take place across a variety of independent venues, including Cabinet Rooms, Kyoto Kitchen, Lucky Lychee, Overdraft, Picaramba, St James's Tavern, the Mucky Duck, the King Alfred, the Winchester Hotel and Spa, the Winchester Orangery and Turquoise. Winchester's annual cocktail festival was originally started in 2016 by the team behind the Cabinet Rooms. After a pause of 5 years due to the pandemic and Cabinet Rooms' expansion into neighbouring premises, the team decided to start stirring and shaking up the city once more, with Winchester Cocktail Week returning last summer. This June sees the sixth edition of Winchester Cocktail Week, including old favourites and exciting new venues. What hasn't changed is the aim to encourage cocktail lovers to explore the city and discover delicious signature cocktails, mocktails and refreshing G&Ts while supporting local along the way. Gary Whiter of Cabinet Rooms said, "This year we've shaken up and refreshed the festival. All venues taking part are independent businesses. They are a really nice mix and all offering something different. This event is an opportunity to visit a range of venues, try a variety of cocktails and find out which ones you like. The Winchester cocktail ticket costs £10. However, with cocktails on offer to wristband wearers for around £6, the cost is covered if you buy just two cocktails. We have new sponsors on board. Buffalo Trace Distillery Crafts award-winning whiskey and Season is a choice of exceptional bitters to create a range of non-alcoholic cocktails from margaritas to Negronis. We also have a special Fever Tree trail to those taking part can discover their favourite G&T." Gary added, This is a happy week with a focus on craft, classic and contemporary cocktails, delicious mocktails and refreshing G&Ts. And there's a lovely photo of Rory McKenna in the cabinet rooms, and behind him are shelves covered with hundreds of different bottles. But he's got, in one hand, he's got a cocktail shaker, and he's straining it through a tea strainer into a glass. And below are lots of pictures of different coloured cocktails with ice and lemon in them.
And this is Community Choir looking for members. A community choir has appointed a new chair after its former leader stepped down after 10 years. The Meon Voices Community Choir said goodbye to Chair Phil Candley and welcomed Jane Vose into the role. Ms. Vose, who has been a choir member for nearly 10 years, was unanimously voted in as chair at the choir's AGM in May. Ms. Vose, a former senior director at BT and yachtswoman, took over the secretary role 5 years ago. She was unanimously elected as chair after nearly a decade with the choir. Tracy Turnbull will take over as choir secretary, and Mr. Candley will remain a keen member of the choir. The choir is now looking for new members to join and be put on the waiting list. No audition or music reading experience is required, with rehearsals due to resume in September. The sessions are every Monday from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the United Free Church in Bishop's Waltham. Two concerts are performed each year, one in the spring and one at Christmas. Anyone interested in joining the choir can get in touch with Jane Vose or Tracy Tudball for further details. And there's a very nice photograph of Jane Vose, the chair of the Meon Voices Community Choir.
This article is titled Anger as Council Carries Out Shockingly Bad Tree Work. Winchester residents have voiced their anger at the City Council's decision to heavily prune trees and hedges along a city footpath during peak bird nesting season. Posting on Wild Winchester, Andrew Dickety was the first to flag up the extensive trimmings on the footpath between Priorsdean Road and Andover Road. He wrote, "Appalled by finding contractors decimating trees, bushes and hedges between Priorsdean Road and Andover Road in peak bird nesting season. It's a regular route for me to and from my work in Winchester. I know of at least one pair of song thrush and robins who are nesting along there. I am disgusted by this lack of care for our wildlife at a very sensitive time of year." Commenting on a later post by Mr. Dickety, Andy Burney wrote, "I've been in the tree business for 25 years, and this is a shockingly bad job." WCC said, "The public right of way at Hall's Farm Close is an important walking route for school children and local residents, so keeping it safe and free from obstruction with a clear view along the path is a priority. Most importantly, our contractors carried out necessary bird checks in the weeks prior to the works commencing, as well as on the morning of the works, all of which confirmed no bird activity in the area which had been cut back."
And here we have Hub opens a fifth food bank with help from council. The Winchester Basics Bank has officially opened a new food and sanitation hub at Badger Farm Community Centre. The hub is the fifth of the bank's current locations in the district and was funded by a £5,000 Community City Council to renovate a room in the centre. It has a series of new shelves and fridges for storing their stocks of food and hygiene and cleaning products. City Councillor leader Martin Todd and other notables were at the official opening. The City Council's Facebook post announcing the opening has been met with some frustrated comments. One reply reads, "Shouldn't have to have them, it's disgusting, we're celebrating the need for people using food banks. The only thing about this to be celebrated is the people kind enough to volunteer in them." The Badger Farm Hub will be open every Monday from 10 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. More details and locations can be found on the Winchester Basic Bank's website. And this is accompanied by a photo of Martin Todd outside with a very large new sign saying Winchester Basics Bank and 12 happy-looking volunteers at the Badger Farm new community hub.
And this is entitled, "Absolutely Thrilled to be Up for an Award." A Winchester healthcare provider has been shortlisted for a prestigious business award. Remedy Health is a finalist in the Central South Business Awards 2025, held in association with Business South. The company has been recognised for its role in community healthcare and wellbeing. Remedy Health provides private healthcare services in the Central South region, including health consultations, a menopause service, and vaccination services. Martin Hoffman, Managing Director of Platinum Media Group and organiser of the event, said, "It's clear that businesses across the region are making a real impact, and Remedy Health is a shining example of community-focused excellence." The Central South Business Award recognises achievement in 15 categories, such as innovation, customer service, startups, and professional services. One business will be named Company of the Year. Deborah Evans, owner of the Remedy Health, said, "We are absolutely thrilled to be recognised as a finalist. Our mission has always been to make healthcare more personal, more proactive, and more accessible. This recognition is a testament to the dedication of our incredible team and the trust our patients place in us every day." The winners will be announced on Wednesday, July the 2nd, at a black tie ceremony at the Leonardo Royal Hotel Grand Harbour in Southampton, attended by more than 400 business leaders and innovators. And this is accompanied by a photograph of six of the smiling ladies at Remedy Health.
This article is titled, "Work Goes On at Closed Deli." Construction workers have been seen in a popular cafe which closed suddenly at the end of April. Contractors from Evolution 5 were spotted carrying out work in Basil Leaf Deli, St George's Street, on Monday, June the 2nd. The contractors have covered up the main windows and placed up signs apologising for any noise while they carry out their work. Workers at the site declined to comment. This comes after Basil Leaf Deli shockingly closed after its landlord, QVest A8 Limited, issued a notice of forfeiture and took it back under its control. As previously reported, the notice of forfeiture was issued on Wednesday, April 16th, only 4 days after the cafe canvassed for bands to play at the venue on Saturday, April 12th. In a notice on the door, the owners of Basil Leaf were instructed to collect their goods by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, April the 30th, or the landlord will sell or otherwise dispose of them. On Tuesday, April 29th, the Hampshire Chronicle saw two vans spotted outside clearing out the space, with the one bustling venue has been stripped back to just a few wooden pallets, baskets, glass bottles, empty cake displays and blackboards. The notice of forfeiture on the door of the cafe said, "The landlord has today, 16th April 2025, peaceably re-entered 14 to 16 St George's House in accordance with the landlord's power under clause 37.1A of the lease. The lease has therefore ended through forfeiture and the premises have been secured."
And here we have Bushfield Plan unsustainable. Campaigners fighting against the development of Bushfield Camp have argued against its inclusion in the Winchester local plan. Members of the Save Bushfield Camp group told planning inspector Royzen Barrett that the plan is unsustainable and would damage the biodiversity of the site. Addressing Ms. Barrett at a public examination of the local plan on Tuesday, June the 3rd, City Councillor Brian Laming, who represents Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said, "The Save Bushfield Camp group was founded to make sure you had concise objections to what is going on. That's why you have all these groups coming together. If you go to Bushfield Camp, we would be more than happy to meet you there and show you around." Group member Charles Jennings argued against city planners, saying that the camp is inaccessible to the public, saying, "I probably know Bushfield Camp better than anyone else. I've walked on it for the last 40 years without any hindrance until an application was made previously. There have been 4 applications for development in the last 40 years, all of them unsuccessful. There are thousands of people who use it for walking, running and bird watching on a daily basis. The site is open to the public. If anyone wants to go up there at any time, you'll find residents from 4 local communities using it on a regular basis. I would be delighted for someone to challenge me on this. I've walked this site for 40 years and I have never been challenged." Ben Marsh said that he feels that he believes the plans are unjustified because Bushfield Camp has high biodiversity value, according to Natural England. Meanwhile, Phil Gagg from WINAG said that if the plans to construct the site go ahead, Winchester will not reach its target of carbon neutrality by 2030. Mr. Gagg added that the position of the site had more links to Southampton and Basingstoke than Winchester, saying, "It seems that the traffic materials suggest that this is not a meeting a local need, but a regional need." Speaking on behalf of the church commissioners who own the land at Bushfield, Nick Grant, KC, told Ms. Barrett that nothing in the development plans was a showstopper. He added that the 20-hectare site that the developers want to build on will leave the majority of the area undeveloped. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Bushfield Camp, a tiny bit of road still showing, but surrounded on either side by bushes and trees and grassland.
And this is about Winchester MP's Gaza concerns. Winchester's MP has pressed the Labour government over its actions on Gaza as famine looms over the war-torn region. Speaking in the House of Commons on Tuesday, the 20th of May, Liberal Democrat MP Danny Chambers grilled Foreign Secretary David Lammy over aid. He asked, "What is the concrete action that can be taken against an illegal blockade that is preventing medicine and food getting to these people? Does it include, with our allies, for example, airdrops of aid?" Mr. Lammy replied, "When Dr. Chambers says, what is the concrete action? The concrete action is really straightforward. The Netanyahu stops. He halts his course of action. That is the concrete action. We are taking concrete action with our allies to try and bring this to an end. But he knows that in the end, this is in the hands of the Israeli government. And standing here, holding your hands, expressing disgust is not sufficient. I recognise that. But it is in the hands of the Israeli government. They will be held to account if they don't act." Speaking to the Chronicle, Dr. Chambers spoke of his view of the situation in Gaza. "I am deeply distressed by the human catastrophe in the region," he said. "The displacement of 1.9 million Palestinians, the escalating violence, and the UK government's failure to act are deeply concerning. We are also deeply concerned for the safety of the Israeli hostages who remain unaccounted for and demand their immediate release."
Brewery names one of the best employers. A company with a pub in East Meon has been named one of the best places to work in the UK. Hall & Woodhouse, which owns the Ye Olde George, has been recognised as one of the Sunday Times best places to work in the big companies list. This is the second consecutive year that a family-owned brewer has received the national recognition. The 2025 Sunday Times Best Places to Work Awards celebrate top UK companies that deliver employee satisfaction and workplace excellence. Results for the awards are collated through team members completing survey questions, measuring employee experience, reward and recognition, job satisfaction and well-being. Dean Livesey, Director of Great Places to Work at Hall & Woodhouse, said, "We are thrilled to feature on the Sunday Times Best Places to Work list for the second year running. Being a values-led business, our team is central to everything we do. This award confirms our team feel valued and a part of the Hall & Woodhouse family, something we continuously strive for. We have built on the foundations we laid out in the previous year to become an even better employer, and I am delighted to have achieved this goal. It is imperative that Hall & Woodhouse remains a great place to work for generations."
And here we have BT's fresh install hideous street hubs. Telecom's giant BT has submitted a fresh application to install hideous, in quotes, street hubs in Winchester 2 years after its last attempt was blocked. The new hubs, which consist of an LED screen mounted in a rectangular block, will be put up in three different locations across the city: by the train station, by the university on Romsey Road, and near Waitrose on Stockbridge Road. The City Council refused a similar application in 2023, which proposed five different hubs, some of which were on or near the High Street. The plans were fiercely protested at the time, with a petition gathering over 200 signatures against them, while City Councillors branded the hubs hideous and horrendous. Under the new application, the screens would replace disused phone boxes. According to BT, street hubs are free to use, fully accessible community assets connecting and improving local streets in urban areas. At no cost to taxpayers or end users, street hubs provide communities with an unprecedented suite of essential urban tools. Ultra-fast, public and encrypted Wi-Fi powered by 100% renewable carbon-free energy, inspected weekly and cleaned at least every 2 weeks, monitored 24/7 free phone calls display, community and emergency, i.e. police, awareness messaging, ability to house IoT sensors such as air quality, traffic, etc. The LED screens will also have advertisements. The precise locations of the hubs are listed as on pavement near Waitrose Food Store, Stockbridge Road, outside Winchester Railway Station, Station Hill, and outside West Down Student Village, Romsey Road. 2 years ago, David Munday of Whitebeam Close Winchester submitted an objection to the five proposals. He said, "These are advertising displays, not a street hub, and are an eyesore as well as a wasteful use of power. They block the pavement and provide nothing for local population." Also commenting 2 years ago, Councillor Kelsey Learney said BT hubs were ugly and unnecessary and would obstruct people with limited sight. "They are going to be horrendous blots on the townscape," she said. Branding them as hideous, Councillor Charles Radcliffe said BT could use smaller units, but these were effectively billboards to make money for the company. And it is, of course, accompanied by three potential spots for the said billboards, which are, the height of a tall man and quite wide, with a long screen that comes down almost to the ground, and they somehow seem to be fitting them onto the pavement. But he's absolutely right, it could be quite distracting if you were trying to walk past with a white stick.
This is about an arts charity partnership. An arts charity has announced a new partnership with a financial consultancy firm. Play to the Crowd, the charity behind Theatre Royal Winchester, Hat Fair and Playmakers, has revealed TMC Financial Consultancy as its latest corporate partner. The financial advisory firm, which is based in Winchester, has pledged to donate a portion of its fees each time a new client mentions Play to the Crowd. The consultancy firm also supported the charity during its involvement in Winchester's inaugural Legacy Action Week. During this event, it attended free public information sessions to provide guidance on the impact of donations, gift making, and legacy decisions in the community. Tom Collins, chartered financial planner and founder of TMC Financial Consultancy, said, "Supporting local businesses and charities is hugely important to us, and we couldn't be more excited about our partnership with Play to the Crowd." Becca Moore, fundraising manager at Play to the Crowd, said, "We're so pleased to welcome TMC Financial Consultancy as a corporate partner. It means a lot to have a local business actively championing our work. TMC Financial Consultancy now joins other businesses, including the Wickham Arms, Winchester Royal Hotel, Norton Park Hotel, and Howden Insurance, in making regular donations to the charity."
This article is titled "Muscular Dystrophies Charity Boost." The Winchester branch of Muscular Dystrophy UK has raised money for the charity by holding a coffee morning. The event was held at Rick Stein in Winchester High Street with coffee and cake on offer. Barbara Anderson, the press officer for Muscular Dystrophy UK Winchester, said, "We are most grateful to everyone at Rick Stein for making this event such a success and raising £377 for the charity while spreading a warm and friendly feeling. It was attended by members of the charity and many friends."
And here we have Slimming World members fantastic Sick K fundraisers. Slimming World members in Winchester have raised more than £6,000 for Cancer Research UK. Members took part in the Race for Life, with groups from Badger Farm Community Centre and the Winchester Club joining in. For many, completing the event was not just a personal milestone, but also a celebration of their health journeys. This was largely supported by Slimming World's Body Magic Physical Activity Programme. Susie Buckery-Barney, Slimming World consultant and team developer for the Winchester area, said, "It's a fantastic example of community spirit and how local people are making a real difference both to their own lives and to life-saving research. The members really did do an incredible job together with their fantastic fundraising efforts. I'm so proud of what they've achieved. They've been sharing with friends, families and colleagues their preparation for Race for Life for a few months since we decided as a group to take part. There was a team of 35 of us on the day. One couple from the Badger Farm Slimming World group raised more than £1,300 between them. They joined the group last year and have now lost a combined total of more than 7 stone. Susie added, "Their commitment to both their health and this important cause has been nothing short of inspiring." And it is, of course, accompanied by a photograph of the entire group. I think it probably looks as if it's before they set off on their run for life. Most of them in a sort of some sort of pink t-shirt or skirt or whatever, and about to set out to raise money for the lovely charity.
A charity applauds its community heroes. A charity has hailed its volunteers as community heroes and is calling for more people to join them. The Winchester-based organisation, Friends of the Family, supports families facing adversity, including those dealing with domestic violence, disability, poverty, bereavement or housing insecurity. The charity offers a range of services, from group therapy for mums to befriending service for children aged between 5 and 13. The charity said it could not function without its volunteers. Operations Director Joe Smith said, "Our wonderful volunteers are the glue which hold our services together. Whether they're enabling our mums to attend group therapy by looking after their children or offering friendship to a child in crisis, it's no exaggeration to describe them as superheroes." The charity's volunteers have spoken of the rewarding experience of working for the charity. Andy, who supports a child with the charity's befriending service, said, "We were returning from spending a few hours kicking a ball in the park when he turned to me and declared it was the best day of his life. It was wonderful to know I'd made a difference." Flora, who volunteers for the Mums and Young Children group, said, "I found it very helpful because it gave me links into the community. There was a time when I was low myself and I still felt accepted there." As the charity celebrates its volunteers, it has warned that its waiting lists are growing and it is in desperate need of more volunteers. And this is accompanied by a very jolly photo of a group of the volunteers by the beach.
This article is titled "Pioneering Energy Plan." A new digital tool will help create a first-of-its-kind local area energy plan. Winchester City Council is using Lenza to develop a digital local area energy plan, or LAEP, for the district. The council says this will be the first in the country to be developed in this way. The LAEP will identify the most cost-effective methods to make energy use greener and allow communities to propose their own local energy schemes. The Lenza tool will enable the council to identify where energy saving measures can be introduced, such as improved insulation or low carbon heating in buildings with potential heat loss. It is also capable of identifying optimal locations for renewable technologies, including solar panels, electric vehicle charging points, and renewable energy generation sites. The project is a collaboration with Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, SSEN, and Advanced Infrastructure AI Technology Limited. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate and Nature Emergency at Winchester City Council, said, "Having experienced the capabilities of Lenza as a data tool during the pilot project, I'm really excited to see how it can help us develop our local area energy plan. The council anticipates cost savings of up to £50,000 or 54% compared to traditional consultancy methods. The LAEP is expected to be completed by early 2026.
And Nashville-inspired singer to perform in Winchester. A British musician will perform in Winchester during his UK tour. Rob Wheeler, who grew up in Cheshire, will perform at the Railway Inn on Friday, June the 19th, following the release of his third album, Leave Tomorrow. Inspired by his time in Nashville, Wheeler's songs reflect his experiences and collaborations with Grammy-nominated songwriters Jeff Trott, Steve Dorff, and Frank Liddell. Wheeler said, "Growing up in the northwest of England, Nashville represented to me what I imagine Hollywood represents to aspiring actors, a mythical land that seems both untouchable and utterly irresistible. My American heroes sang about cowboys and horses, desperados and drifters, but I write and sing about what I see from my own window and how it feels from my point of view." The album portrays a theme of hope often explored in country music. It features songs such as "I'm Not Afraid to Fall," a grandiose tune, and "Throw a Little Light My Way," a gentle track expressing the hope for the road ahead. Wheeler said, "This record is not just driving and whiskey and breakups. Every song is for the listener to discover in their own way."
And this is entitled "Ex-Counter-Terror Cop to be Next Police Chief." A former counter-terror officer has been selected to be the next Chief Constable of Hampshire Police. Alexis Boone is the Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones' preferred candidate for the position, which is subject to a confirmation hearing on the 24th of June. He's set to replace Scott Chilton, who retired earlier this month after 33 years in service. As revealed by the Daily Echo, he had been under investigation for alleged gross misconduct, and his retirement came just weeks after he was placed under investigation for a past relationship with a junior officer. Mr. Boone is currently Deputy Assistant Commissioner with the Metropolitan Police. He started his career with Surrey Police in 1998, later transferring to the Met, where he worked his way up the ranks before taking on counter-terrorism command. Mr. Boone led the strategic response to terrorism associated with the Syria conflict and was responsible for hundreds of counter-terrorism and national security operations across the UK and internationally. In 2021, he was appointed temporary commander for Central Specialist Crime, running proactive capabilities, including the flying squad. He was also awarded the QPM for Distinguished Service in the 2021 Queen's Birthday Honours. Deputy Chief Constable Sam Durea is currently acting chief. Mr. Boone was selected following a comprehensive formal application and interview process in accordance with national regulations. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones said, "After a comprehensive selection process, I am delighted to announce Alexis Boone as my preferred candidate to be appointed as the next Chief Constable of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. Alexis is a highly experienced senior police officer who has worked his way up the ranks, from constable to leading counter-terrorism operations across the UK and running the flying squad. Now, as Deputy Assistant Commissioner for Local Policing, he leads over 20,000 officers and staff in London." And this is accompanied by photographs of both Donna Jones and Alexis Boone.
This article is titled "Winchester Hospice Receives £5,000 Airline Boost." Winchester Hospice will benefit from a £5,000 donation announced by an airline. The money comes from Logan Air's Green Skies Community Fund, which supports charities, community groups and small businesses in their sustainability efforts. The hospice will use the funds to purchase an e-bike and bike parking. This will enable sustainable, low-emission palliative home care and encourage staff and visitors to cycle. A Woodland Trust and a sustainability-focused education centre are also among the community projects to benefit from Logan Air funding. Rebecca Borenson, Director of Safety and Sustainability at Logan Air, said, "Green Skies is about helping the communities we serve build a greener, more sustainable future. What's especially inspiring is how each initiative reflects the unique needs and strengths of its local area. Whether it's creating hands-on learning opportunities, restoring natural habitats, or making everyday transport more sustainable, these organisations are putting climate action into practice in ways that are inclusive, practical, and community-led. The Green Skies programme, launched in July 2021, includes a mandatory carbon offsetting charge on all flights, with funds invested in accredited offsetting and community sustainability schemes."
And big surge in blue badges. More than 34,000 blue badge applications were received by the County Council last year, the administration has revealed. Hampshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways and Passenger Transport, Lulu Bowerman, said that around 6,000 more applications were received compared to pre-COVID. She added that between January and March this year, the average processing time for blue badge reapplications was between 7.5 weeks and 11.5 weeks from the date the application was received to when a member of the blue badge team assessed it. Councillor Bowerman said that due to the high volume of applications received, all blue badge applications are currently taking more than 4 weeks to process. She said, "The DFT, Department for Transport, advises that local authorities usually make a decision within 12 weeks. That's the guidance. So these figures exclude applications received via the fast track application route for those with life-limiting condition, which are normally prioritised and processed within 48 hours of receipt. According to the Cabinet Member officers who have prioritised applications from existing blue badge holders, so when an applicant continues to qualify for a blue badge, there is no period for which an individual is without a valid badge." Councillor Keith House said the interesting data showed a rising elderly population and therefore a rise in demand. However, he asked whether she was satisfied with the performance since it can take almost 3 months to process a renewal.
And this is about the courts being hit by a Wi-Fi outage. A nationwide Wi-Fi outage is affecting cases in magistrates and Crown Courts across Hampshire. Judges at Winchester Crown Court noted that the issue was affecting cases on Thursday the 29th of May, although solutions were found to keep the court running. Judge Adam Feast KC noted that the outage was impacting government Wi-Fi across the UK. Government Wi-Fi is available at thousands of institutional buildings such as courts, councils and NHS trusts. In one court case on the morning of Thursday the 29th of May, court officials initially struggled to set up a video link. However, the problem was soon resolved and the case proceeded as usual.
Rugby star Sue backs group's work. An annual coffee morning has been held by a women's organisation in Winchester. Sir Optimus International of Winchester hosted the event on Tuesday, May the 20th at Rickstein in the High Street. The event was attended by club members, guests and visitors. Sharon Worth from the Menopause Cafe in Winchester and members of the Trinity Services were also present. The club expressed gratitude to Hendrik of Rickstein for arranging the event and Councillor Sudhakar Akwa of the Mayor of Winchester for his attendance and support. Former Women's World Cup rugby player Sue Dorrington also attended the event and endorsed the club's project. The club now sponsors the under-18s girls rugby team in Winchester. Members of the club discussed their work and support for local charities, Trinity Women's Services and the Women's Refuge. The annual picnic is on Sunday, June the 29th at St. Swithin's School for the women and their families in the refuge. There will also be at Abbey Gardens for the Hat Fair on July the 5th.
And a tree work will close road. A two-day road closure has been confirmed to allow for tree cutting work. The closure will affect a section of the A3090 Romsey Road, Hursley, between its junction with Enmill Lane and Miller's Lane. It will be in place from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, June the 14th and Sunday, June the 15th. An alternative route will be available via the A3090 Otterbourne Road and Poles Lane. Openreach has confirmed that facilities will be provided to allow access to adjacent premises and notice will be given to those directly affected.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you have finished with it. Thanks to the editors and all the other volunteers who prepare and dispatch our recordings to you. And thanks to today's readers, Polly.
Goodbye.
Ben.
Goodbye.
Jane.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. Thanks for listening.